Chapter 21. A World of Dreams. Egwene scrubbed her hands with a hand towel as she hurried down the dimly lit corridor. She had washed them twice, but they still felt greasy. She had not thought there could be so many pots in the world, and today had been bake day, so buckets of ashes had had to be hauled from the ovens, and the hearths cleaned, and the tables rubbed bone white with fine sand, and the floors scrubbed on hands and knees. Ash and grease stained her white dress. Her back ached, and she wanted to be in her bed, but Verin had come to the kitchens, supposedly for a meal to eat in her rooms, and whispered a summons to her in passing. Verin had her quarters above the library, in corridors used only by a few other brown sisters. There was a dusty air to the halls there, as if the women who lived along them were too busy with other things to bother having the servants clean very often, and the passages took odd turns and twists, sometimes dipping or rising unexpectedly. The tapestries were few, their colorful weavings dulled, apparently cleaned as seldom as everything else here. Many of the lamps were unlit, plunging much of the hall into gloom. Egwene thought she had it to herself, except for a flash of white ahead, perhaps a novice or a servant scurrying about some task. Her shoes, clicking on bare black and white floor tiles, made echoes. It was not a comfortable place for one thinking of the Black Aja. She found what Verin had told her to look for, a dark paneled door at the top of a rise, beside a dusty tapestry of a king on horseback receiving the surrender of another king. Verin had named the pair of them, men dead hundreds of years before Arthur Hawkwing was born. Verin always seemed to know such things, but Egwene could not remember their names, or the long-vanished countries they had ruled. It was the only wall hanging she had seen that matched Verin's description, though. Minus the sound of her own footsteps, the hallway seemed even emptier than before, and more threatening. She rapped on the door and entered hurriedly on the heels of an absent-minded, "Who is it? Come in." One step into the room, she stopped and stared. Shelves lined the walls, except for one door that must lead to inner rooms and except for where maps hung, often in layers, and what seemed to be charts of the night sky. She recognized the names of some constellations, the Plowman and the Haywain, the Archer and the Five Sisters, but others were unfamiliar. Books and papers and scrolls covered nearly every flat surface, with all sorts of odd things interspersed among the piles, and sometimes on top of them. Strange shapes of glass or metal, spheres and tubes interlinked, and circles held inside circles, stood among bones and skulls of every shape and description. What appeared to be a stuffed brown owl, not much bigger than Egwene's hand, stood on what seemed to be a bleached white lizard's skull, but could not be, for the skull was longer than her arm and had crooked teeth as big as her fingers. Candlesticks had been stuck about in a haphazard fashion, giving good light here and shadows there, although seeming in danger of setting fire to papers in some places. The owl blinked at her, and she jumped. "Ah, yes," Verin said. She was seated behind a table as cluttered as everything else in the room, a torn page held carefully in her hands. "It is you, yes." She noticed Egwene's sideways glance at the owl and said absently, "He keeps down mice. They chew paper." Her gesture took in the entire room and reminded her of the page she held. "Fascinating, this. Roselle of Essam claimed more than 100 pages survived the breaking, and she should have known, since she wrote barely 200 years afterwards, but only this one piece still exists, so far as I know. Perhaps only this very copy. Roselle wrote that it held secrets the world could not face, and she would not speak of them plainly. I have read this page 1,000 times, trying to decipher what she meant." The tiny owl blinked at Egwene again. She tried not to look at it. "What does it say, Verin?" said I. Verin blinked, very much as the owl had. "What does it say? It is a direct translation, mind, and reads almost like a bard reciting in high chant. Listen. Heart of the dark, Baalzamon. Name hidden within name, shrouded by name. Secret buried within secret, cloaked by secret. Betrayer of hope. Ishamael betrays all hope. Truth burns and sears. Hope fails before truth. A lie is our shield. Who can stand against the heart of the dark? Who can face the betrayer of hope? Soul of shadow, soul of the shadow, he is... She stopped with a sigh. It ends there. What do you make of it?
I don't know, Egwene said. I do not like it.
Well, why should you, child? Like it or understand it? I have studied it nearly 40 years, and I do neither.
Varen carefully placed the page inside a silk-lined folder of stiff leather, then casually stuffed the folder into a stack of papers.
But you did not come for that.
She rummaged across the table, muttering to herself, several times barely catching a pile of books or manuscripts before it toppled. Finally she came up with a handful of pages covered in a thin spidery hand and tied with nubby string.
Here, child, everything that is known about Leandrin and the women who went with her, names, ages, ajahs, where they were born, everything I could find in the records, even how they performed in their studies. What we know of the Turangrial they took, too, which isn't much. Only descriptions, for the most part. I do not know whether any of this will help. I saw nothing of any use in this.
Perhaps one of us will see something. A sudden wave of suspicion took Egwene by surprise. If she didn't leave something out.
The Amarlin seemed to trust Varen only because she had to. What if Varen was Black Aja herself?
She gave herself a shake. She had traveled all the way from Tomonhead to Tar Valon with Varen, and she refused to believe this plump scholar could be a dark friend.
I trust you, Varen Sedai.
Can I really?
The Aes Sedai blinked at her again, then dismissed whatever thought had come to her with a shake of her head. That list I gave you may be important, or it may be so much waste of paper, but it isn't the only reason I summoned you.
She started moving things on the table, making some shaky stacks taller to clear a space.
I understand from Anaya that you might become a dreamer. The last was Corianin Nadil 473 years ago, and from what I can make of the records, she barely deserved the name. It would be quite interesting if you do.
She tested me, Varen Sedai, but she couldn't be sure that any of my dreams foretold the future.
That is only part of what a dreamer does, child. Perhaps the least part. Anaya believes in bringing girls along too slowly, in my opinion. Look here.
With one finger, Varen drew a number of parallel lines across the area she had cleared, lines clear and dust atop the old beeswax.
Let these represent worlds that might exist if different choices had been made, if major turning points in the pattern had gone another way.
The worlds reached by the portal stones, Egwene said, to show she had listened to Varen's lectures on the journey from Tomonhead.
What could this possibly have to do with whether or not she was a dreamer?
Very good.
But the pattern may be even more complex than that, child. The wheel weaves our lives to make the pattern of an age, but the ages themselves are woven into the age lace, the great pattern. Who can know if this is even the 10th part of the weaving, though? Some in the Age of Legends apparently believe that there were still other worlds, even harder to reach than the worlds of the Portal Stones, if that can be believed, lying like this.
She drew more lines, cross-hatching the first set. For a moment she stared at them.
The warp and the woof of the weave. Perhaps the Wheel of Time weaves a still greater pattern from worlds.
Straightening, she dusted her hands.
Well, that is neither here nor there. In all of these worlds, whatever their other variations, a few things are constant. One is that the Dark One is imprisoned in all of them.
In spite of herself, Egwene stepped closer to peer at the lines Varen had drawn.
In all of them? How can that be? Are you saying there is a father of lies for each world?
The thought of so many Dark Ones made her shiver.
No, child. There is one creator who exists everywhere at once for all of these worlds. In the same way, there is only one Dark One, who also exists in all of these worlds at once. If he is freed from the prison the creator made in one world, he is freed on all. So long as he is kept prisoner in one, he remains imprisoned on all.
That does not seem to make sense, Egwene protested.
Paradox, child.
The Dark One is the embodiment of paradox and chaos, the destroyer of reason and logic, the breaker of balance, the unmaker of order. The owl suddenly took flight on silent wings, landing atop a large white skull on a shelf behind the Aes Sedai. It peered down at the two women, blinking. Egwene had noticed the skull when she came in, with its curled horns and snout, and vaguely wondered what sort of ram had so big a head. Now she took in the roundness of it, the high forehead. Not a ram's skull, a Trolloc. She drew a shuddering breath.
"Verin Sedai, what does this have to do with being a dreamer? The Dark One is bound in Sheol Ghul, and I do not want to even think of him escaping.
But the seals on his prison are weakening. Even novices know that now."
"Do with being a dreamer? Why, nothing, child, except that we must all confront the Dark One in one way or another. He is prisoned now, but the pattern did not bring Randall Thor into the world for no purpose. The dragon reborn will face the Lord of the Grave, that much is sure. If Rand survives that long, of course. The Dark One will try to distort the pattern if he can. Well, we have gone rather far afield, haven't we?"
"Forgive me, Verin Sedai, but if this," Egwene indicated the lines drawn in the dust, "has nothing to do with being a dreamer, why are you telling me about it?"
Verin stared at her as if she were deliberately being dense.
"Nothing? Of course it has something to do with it, child. The point is that there is a third constant besides the Creator and the Dark One. There is a world that lies within each of these others, inside all of them at the same time, or perhaps surrounding them. Writers in the Age of Legends called it Telaran Riod, the unseen world. Perhaps the world of dreams is a better translation. Many people, ordinary folk who could not think of channeling, sometimes glimpse Telaran Riod in their dreams, and even catch glimmers of these other worlds through it. Think of some of the peculiar things you have seen in your dreams. But a dreamer, child, a true dreamer, can enter Telaran Riod."
Egwene tried to swallow, but a lump in her throat stopped her.
"Enter it? I don't think I am a dreamer, Verin Sedai. Anaya Sedai's tests—"
Verin cut her off. "Prove nothing one way or the other. And Anaya still believes that you may very well be one."
"I suppose I will learn whether I am or not eventually," Egwene mumbled. "Light, I want to be, don't I? I want to learn. I want it all."
"You have no time to wait, child. The Amarlin has entrusted a great task to you and Nynaeve. You must reach out for any tool you might be able to use."
Verin dug a red wooden box from under the welter on her table. The box was large enough to hold sheets of paper, but when the Aes Sedai opened the lid a crack, all she pulled out was a ring carved from stone, all flecks and stripes of blue and brown and red, and too large to be a finger ring.
"Here, child."
Egwene shifted the papers to take it, and her eyes widened in surprise. The ring certainly looked like stone, but it felt harder than steel and heavier than lead, and the circle of it was twisted. If she ran a finger along one edge, it would go around twice, inside as well as out. It only had one edge. She moved her finger along that edge twice, just to convince herself.
"Corianna Nadil," Verin said, "had that Turangrial in her possession for most of her life. You will keep it now."
Egwene almost dropped the ring.
"A Turangrial? I am to keep a Turangrial?"
Verin seemed not to notice her shock.
"According to her, it eases the passage to Telaran Riod. She claimed it would work for those without talent as well as for Aes Sedai, so long as you are touching it when you sleep. There are dangers, of course. Telaran Riod is not like other dreams. What happens there is real. You are actually there, instead of just glimpsing it."
She pushed back the sleeve of her dress, revealing a faded scar the length of her forearm.
"I tried it myself once, some years ago. Anaya's healing did not work as well as it should have. Remember that."
The Aes Sedai let her sleeve cover the scar again.
"I will be careful, Verin Sedai."
"Real?
My dreams are bad enough as they are. I want no dreams that leave scars. I'll put it in a sack and stick it in a dark corner and leave it there. But she wanted to learn. She wanted to be Aes Sedai, and no Aes Sedai had been a dreamer in nearly 500 years. I'll be very careful. She slipped the ring into her pouch and tugged the drawstrings tight, then picked up the papers Varen had given her. Remember to keep it hidden, child. No novice or even an accepted should have a thing like that in her possession, but it may prove useful to you. Keep it hidden. Yes, Varen, said I. Remembering Varen's scar, she almost wished another Aes Sedai would come along and take it from her right then. Good child. Now off with you. It grows late, and you must be up early to help with breakfast. Sleep well. Varen sat looking at the door for a long time after it closed behind Egwene. The owl hooted softly behind her. Pulling the red box to her, she opened the lid all the way and frowned at what nearly filled the space. Page upon page, covered with a precise hand, the black ink barely faded after nearly 500 years. Corianna Nadil's notes, everything she had learned in 50 years of studying that peculiar Tarangrial. A secretive woman, Corianan. She had kept by far the greater part of her knowledge from everyone, trusting it only to these pages. Only chance and a habit of rummaging through old papers in the library had led Varen to them. As far as she could discover, no Aes Sedai besides herself knew of the Tarangrial. Corianan had managed to erase its existence from the records. Once again she considered burning the manuscript, just as she had considered giving it to Egwene. But destroying knowledge, any knowledge, was anathema to her. As for the other, no. It is best by far to leave things as they are. What will happen will happen. She let the lid drop shut. Now where did I put that page? Frowning, she began to search the stacks of books and papers for the leather folder. Egwene was already out of her mind.